In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 377. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
Going good. Good to be back on the show. It's going to be a fun week of episodes. It's a lot of listeners' favorite episode. And now you might have your ears perked of what we're going to talk about. But yeah, it's going to be a good one for sure. And I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, we're talking about over 35 relievers today. No, it's going to be a fun week. Crystal ball episodes here. I'm doing prospect crystal ball today. Dynasty later in the week. I already had a couple people asking me, even one earlier today on Sunday, when we were going to do these. Now, we always do them right around this time of year, late February, early March or so. As we figured, why not make this our crystal ball week? So, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun, kind of looking into the future a little bit here. But before we get into all of that, the usual housekeeping, you can find us on Twitter. Chris is at Chris Clegg, MILB. I am at Eric Cross, MLB. Show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more work from each of us. And make sure you check out all the great content available with Rotoballer's MLB Premium Pass. Rotoballer's VIP draft kit comes with exclusive rankings and ATC projections from Nick Mariano and Ariel Cohen. It also includes plenty of content from both Chris and I. Sync your leagues with TeamSync to use our live draft assistant and get customized expert advice for your league-specific settings. Our premium pass comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. Go to rotoballer.com/radio to use that discount code at Toolshed for 10% off at checkout. All right, so we're going to go in the usual fashion here, 25-1. These are projected top 25 prospects 1 year from today. Always a fun little exercise here, especially this year because I feel like a lot of the top guys are graduating. I think at least half of my current top 25 will probably graduate, and you'll see, you know, some names that Chris has that I don't, or vice versa. We're also kind of using our own personal best judgment, like, all right, I think this guy might graduate, and Chris doesn't, or vice versa. So kind of a few of those things that factor in as well. We'll go five at a time. So we'll start with 25 through 21. Chris, who you got?
All right, I got Jamie Arnold at 25, followed by Griffin Burkholder, Yairo Padilla, Arjun Namala, and Braden Montgomery, 21. So those are my first five.
All right, we have one similar in this group of five. I have Cole Emerson, 25, Yoelin Susana, 24, Eduardo Beltre, 23, Aiden Smith, 22, and Jamie Arnold at 21 here from the 2025 MLB draft class. And we're adding in any draftees as well if we believe that they'll be up in this part of our rankings by that time. So, Chris, you've already kind of, I think, said that you think right now, as of now, obviously it could change in the coming months, that Jamie Arnold is the best player, not just the best pitcher, but the best player in 2025 FYPDs. Now, is that more so because you think that he is that good, or maybe a little bit of the draft class not being the greatest?
Both. It's pretty rare, I would say, pitcher 1-1. Like, that just isn't a good move, honestly, for most drafts. But Jamie Arnold is elite, and honestly, all the hitters are scary. Like, everybody loves Ethan Holliday. His contact rates are terrible. I mean, Jace Lavallette, like, yeah, he's enticing with the power, but also there's a massive downside that he struggles with contact. He struggles with good philo. Like, there's major concerns with both those top hitters that everybody talks about. I think that we're going to see draft boards look drastically different, and they always do, but I mean drastically different come, you know, June than people were talking about in February. But I think the constant is Jamie Arnold. I think Tyler Bremner's probably a constant as well, not quite as high for me, but what Jamie Arnold does from the left side is absurd. I mean, you look so far, and obviously the results are good. I don't care about the results. I mean, teams are playing pretty bad competition unless they played a tournament at this point. But Arnold's pitch data is absurd. He's throwing these splitters now. It looks like a slider from most camera angles. They just can't justify how good it is. These splitters have negative 8 inches of IVB and 8 inches of arm side run. And they're running like 800, 900 RPMs. Like, they're just like dying. Like, those are literally elite numbers. And the fastball is so unique too. Like, Arnold has improved his velocity. That's awesome. I mean, so when you see the improvement on the velocity, it's like, okay, like, this is great. And then you see the rest of the picture of the pitch data, and it's like, whoa, this fastball is super unique. Like, Arnold's vertical approach angle, he throws from a low slot, it's a sub-5 release, 5-foot release, but his vertical approach angle, like, sits at 4 to, like, I've seen some register, like, down in, like, the negative 3-6 range. Again, elite, elite, elite. The movement profile on it is very unique. His slider is very, very good. It's kind of wild, like, how unique of an arm Jamie Arnold really is. And you factor in also that he's seen the fastball tick up a little bit. He's seen that splitter change up. Like, this is a new pitch for him. And it's just, like, stupid absurd of, like, how good it is. I just think that this guy, like, if you remember Cooper Jerpy a few years back, like, Cooper Jerpy was buzzy. I know he didn't go as high, and he was never as talked about, but Cooper Jerpy was really unique because his release, the approach angle that he created with the fastball. But we're talking about Arnold having, like, 4 miles an hour more velo on the fastball. His splitter is just stupid good. The slider, really good, too. Like, all these pitches grayed out so well, and he commands them well, too. I'm, like, so hyper fixated on Jamie Arnold. Like, he's the easy 1-1 for me. Like, if I was drafting right now, easy 1-1 pick. I think that's a little crazy considering pitchers 1-1. Not always a great mix, but I love some Jamie Arnold, and I think he's really, really good.
Yeah, and it doesn't help that this is just not a great draft class. Like, some people were asking me in my Discord earlier, you know, like, I think next year's class is worse than this. Well, actually, technically, it's this year's class now. 2025 class worse than 2024, which was worse than 2023. So it's been a little downward trend here. But yeah, Jamie Arnold is definitely a really exciting pitcher to watch. Just in general, just watch him pitch. You know, this is a pretty fun range. Like, we could have gone, I'm sure, you know, you felt the same way, Chris. Like, probably like 10 other names kind of wanted to sneak in here, but we had to cap it at 25. I have Arnold also in here at 21. Another pitcher I have in here, Yarlene Susanna at 24. Obviously, there's a bit of a walk issue here with Susanna, but just the combination of, you know, bat missing ability and the ability to get ground balls. He had a ground ball rate near 60% last year and, you know, elite swing strike rate. And he's got fastball, slider, you know, both of those plus or better offerings. Changeup is really firm, but it shows, you know, decent movement profile. But I think this is just going to be one of the best pitching prospects in the game. He's really strong. You know, he's got a big, strong starter's build. You know, he just can miss bats at an absolutely elite clip. And, you know, if it doesn't work out, like if he doesn't, you know, make positive gains this year, you know, with command, with strike throwing, he could be a really good, like, one of the best relievers in the game too. So he has that to fall back on, you know, kind of like a backup plan, so to speak. But Yeah, I've gotten a lot higher on Susanna this offseason. You know, I've been watching a lot more video on him. I've been digging in a lot more to the profile, and he has become one of my favorite pitching prospects in all of baseball right now. And another name that I probably would have had in this top 25, and let me ask you on this real quick as well, Chris. If we didn't get the unfortunate news earlier today about Alejandro Rosario, you know, needing, you know, either Tommy John or that newer, you know, brace procedure, would he have made this top 25 for you?
No, I like him, but again, it's pretty rare for pitchers for me to be this high. I've got a few pitchers in here, and I think he would have been outside. He was outside of it regardless.
Okay, gotcha. I wasn't sure. I think I would have at least been considering him in this kind of area where Susanna is, but unfortunately, he'll be out for all of 2025, hopefully back in 2026. Another one here I wanted to ask you about, Chris. I'm sure the one out of these five, or your first five here, that might have, you know, perked up the ears a little bit of the listeners, Yairo Padilla. What do you like so much about Padilla that has you having him here at 23?
He's getting ready to break out. He's transformed. He had a great year. Like, no denying that. Like, Padilla was not the Statcast darling of the DSL. He wasn't the surface number standout of the DSL. But anybody I've talked to just raves about Padilla. And then he's listed 6'170". I've also talked to people in Cardinals camp. He's grown to 6'4". I've had people tell me he was their best hitter in their fall camp with all prospect hitters. Like, those are some, like, good hitting prospects in that system, which that speaks a lot of volume. He's 17. He'll be 17 through the end of June next year. So we're talking about somebody that was 16 for half the DSL season, put up really good contact numbers. The athlete here is very impressive. Words that have been used to describe to me is, quote, he's a unicorn. Like, those words popping off about a 17-year-old kid is pretty big. There's a possibility he skips the complex and he goes to single A at 17. I think that's a real possibility of what we're looking at here with Padilla. Good glove. He's just a well-rounded player where if the power comes, I think it will, given the frame and how he's developed. He looks like a NFL wide receiver, honestly, at this point. Like, he's built. He looks really good. And if the power does come, the speed sticks. It's a pretty impressive combo of hit, power, and speed. We know he's got the speed already. He's a great runner. It's just the power develop. And I'll bank on that happening for a kid that's grown and developed like he has. I'm very much in on Padilla as a major breakout this year.
Awesome. Yeah, he's a really fun one in that St. Louis system for sure. And another kind of DSL guy that been liking a lot here, especially after writing up the Minnesota Twins org. Was Eduardo Beltre, who had a pretty solid showing in the DSL this past year. He hit 326, 453, 618, 11 bombs, 10 steals in 43 games. You know, there are some concerns here, you know, with how much contact, you know, does he, you know, get to long term. He had a little bit of a higher, you know, swing and miss rate, you know, the higher strikeout rate overall. Well, for a DSL guy, I mean, 23.8% isn't like terrible in the grand scheme of things, but for DSL, especially for a top DSL bat, that is a bit higher. So, you know, those issues will have to be kind of refined and kind of ironed out moving forward, but it's a exciting power speed blend from Beltre. I mean, he's strong, he's athletic, he's quick, a lot of breakout potential traits here that you look for from a, you know, younger hitter. He's, you know, 18 now, probably going to the complex level next year or this year. Like Beltre a lot. I think he could jump up, and, you know, I already have him fifth in the twin system. I think he could jump up as high as, you know, two or three, depending on if Rodriguez and Kiesel graduate this year. So maybe even as high as two behind Walker Jenkins, who I do not believe graduates. But yeah, I like Eduardo Beltre a lot. I think he gets, I mean, he's not, you know, lost in the shuffle with all the other DSL breakouts, but I still think he gets talked about quite as much as he probably should. So I like Eduardo Beltre a lot to break out this year. All right, let's go to our next set of five here.
So 20 through 16. For me, that's Josue De Paula, Jason Churio, Jace Lavallette, Chase Burns, and Robert Kalas. Chris, who you got 20 through 16?
Right, Cam Smith at 20, then followed by Angel Janal, Felton Selston, Thomas White, and Travis Cora.
I love a lot of good, two good pitchers right there with Cora and Thomas White. I almost put Thomas White in mind. He was one I was struggling to include there. Ended up leaving him just off the list here. But, you know, Thomas, let's talk about Thomas White, you know, a bit here, Chris. I mean, one of the top, he's already, you know, in consideration for, you know, top 10 pitching prospect in the game right now. I think he's like in that back end top 10 discussion, you know, maybe just inside for people or just outside, but has, you know, a chance to be, you know, one of the next, maybe the next number one pitching prospect. I think he's definitely in that discussion for next top pitching prospect. So what do you like about Thomas White?
He's just such a unique left-handed arm. He brings a lot to like to the table from a pitch mix perspective, and he's showed to be pretty advanced as far as strike throwing goes as well, and he showed some good improvements there, which I like to see. He handled his own in high A, but you look at the pitch data. I mean, it's a left-hander with already a 95-mile-an-hour fastball right out of high school, topped at 98 last year. High-spinning pitch is pretty good IVB. It's well above average from his 5'7" release height. And he gets good horizontal on it as well. Throws it for strikes. He locates it pretty well. He didn't have the highest whiff rate last year. Like, you'd like to see that improve, but the changeup does play exceptionally well off of it. Changeup and slider both had whiff rates around 40% last year. And they have very good movement profiles. You look at the changeup that's fading about 14, 15 inches on average. It has some carry to it. It's an interesting shape where it doesn't drop as much as you want, but it does have some late drop. A lot of chase out of the zone, a lot of whiffs on that, really good separation from the approach angle, from the fastball. And then he goes 14 inches the other way on the slider, and it has good depth to it as well. So you just look, and he's got two really good bat missing secondaries, and I think the fastball is pretty good as well. So I am very excited to see what Thomas White does this year. I think that he spends a large portion of the year in Double A. I think he can handle it, and I'm really excited to see how his development goes.
Yeah, he was one that I tried so hard to go down and see him his senior year of high school. He was down in Massachusetts. It just didn't work out schedule-wise for me. You know, a lot of times he was pitching, I just wasn't able to get down there for that game. But yeah, Thomas White was somebody I've been following, you know, just because he's a New England kid, and it doesn't, we don't get a lot of New players this good from New England. So whenever there's a, you know, a top prep guy or whatever, I like to try to get and see them as much as I can. But unfortunately, it was not the case with Thomas White, but I definitely love the arm there. In Miami, you know, I got, you know, Chase Burns in this range. And if Chase Burns was, I might not be ranking Chase Burns high enough here because, you know, he on a pure stuff, you know, perspective, he has some of the best stuff in all of the minor leagues. I forget who was saying, I saw someone tweet the other day, something like this too, that Burns has, you know, some of the best stuff that could compare to like a Paul Skenes, you know, in terms of just pure stuff. I mean, there's a lot of other things that go into it, but just looking at the pitch mix and the stuff, you know, Burns is off the charts. I mean, he has one of the best sliders in all of baseball, I think. I mean, not just in the minor leagues, in all of baseball. You know, fastball gets up, you know, mid to upper 90s as well. He can even touch 100 at times. Could riding life on that. You know, slider is about 10 miles an hour or so slower. Changeups in that similar range as well. It also throws, you know, curveball in the low 80s. So those three different velocity bands. You know, command and control, pretty solid with Chase Burns. He's 6'4", about 200, you know, really strong, athletic frame as well. I mean, don't love the landing spot there, obviously, with Cincinnati. But, you know, kind of what we said about, you know, Chase Dolander with Coors. I mean, I think Burns can make it work and form like a really good 1-2 with Hunter Green down the road. So, yeah, I think, you know, Burns could be the next number one pitching prospect. He's also in that discussion as well. Love the stuff here
with Chase Burns. Really excited to see him have a full year here in the minor leagues in 2025. So, yeah, he definitely could be the next number one pitching prospect, or at least in that discussion. Next one here, I wanted to ask you about, Chris, you know, Cam Smith, obviously in a absolutely ideal spot for a right-handed power bat. You know, not that I think it was, you know, people were downgrading him being in the Cubs org, because it's a pretty good org for, you know, hitting development over the last, you know, decade or so. But just the future home ballpark there in Houston obviously plays better for right-handed power than Wrigley Field does. You know, he's a very advanced bat. I think some people I've seen or talked to think he could be up in the majors this year. I'm not so sure, but Cam Smith being just a hit and power guy, you know, it takes a lot for these guys for fantasy rankings to, you know, get this high, unless that blend of hit and power is, you know, pretty damn high. So it sounds like you think that he's going to be, you know, have a pretty elite blend of those two tools.
Yeah, and he showed really good improvement with the contact. Very good athlete for his frame. He's a very big frame, but the athlete is there too. Like, obviously, I'm not going to sit here and tell you I expect Cam Smith to be like a huge source of stolen bases or anything of that nature, but I do think like the power, no doubt, is going to play. It's some of the best power we saw in college baseball last year. The exit velocity data transferred to pro ball. I mean, you look and he had his ninth percentile of 111 with metal last year. Obviously, that mark was elite in the top of college baseball. And he was at 106 with wood, which is still plus power for sure. And the contact skills translate as well. That was my biggest question, because Cam Smith had it. So you go, he's a draft eligible sophomore. So freshman year, 70% contact jumped to 83% last year. Chase rate also dropped from 33% to 21%. So pretty notable changes in the profile, and it all carried over to pro ball. 77% contact, 84% end zone in his small pro sample after the debut. So, you know, I'm buying into what Cam Smith is selling for sure. I think he's got good discipline. He's going to put up good OBP numbers. And I think he's a 25-30 home run bat. He is someone that improved, like, of this last year's draft class, like, he probably vaulted his stock the most this offseason. So I think Cam Smith is on the verge of a big breakout. I think that he may get pushed aggressively this year. You know, how aggressive do they get with him in Houston? Does he go to Asheville for a month? I don't know. I mean, they may just send him to AA. Like, that's a real possibility that he just goes to AA out of the gate, and he can probably handle it. Hoping he gets to Asheville so I can see him a few times. But if not, you know, it's all good. I hope that Cam Smith will excel. He's getting work in the outfield too, so they're looking for spots to get him in the MLB lineup, which that speaks a lot of volume. He's third baseman, but he's kind of worked all over the spring, which I think speaks a lot to how they view him.
Yeah, they're trying to get some more flexibility there. You know, talking about Altuve getting some run in the outfield. I mean, they have Isak Paredes. Just for this year, actually, no, he's arb eligible, isn't he? After the, yeah, so he could be there until, well, for the next three seasons. So, I mean, but he's played, you know, he mostly third, but he can move over to second if need be. You know, if they want to move Paredes to second, Altuve to the outfield. I'm not sure how I feel about that, but let's just say they, you know, go that route. That could open up the hot corner for Cam Smith. So, and definitely could add some added flexibility for Houston there. But, yeah, Cam Smith, really solid bat. You know, which one of the two, you know, kind of not draft breakouts, but the two guys that kind of vaulted their value up a bit after the draft, Cam Smith, Christian Moore, who do you think is the better player three years from now?
Probably – I mean, that's tough. I feel a little safer with Cam Smith's profile. I think there's more volatility with Christian Moore. I think that Moore's value will come that he's playing second base and he's got power. That's huge for fantasy. Right. But I feel a little bit better about Smith's hit tool, especially against breaking balls. Like, that's something to watch with Christian Moore. If he comes up quick, like, I think he's going to struggle out the gate against good major league breaking balls. But yeah, I'm a little more comfortable with Cam Smith here.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. I pretty much echo that. Next guy I want to talk about before we get to the next five of these rankings, and Jason Chirio with the Cleveland Guardians. Yes, you know, same last name as another, you know, really good guy with a first name starts with a J. Jackson Chirio, You know, Jason doesn't have quite the same profile as Jackson does, but really good base of tools. I mean, he's a plus runner and, you know, plus hit tool guy. Like, he's got those two tools. You know, he had contact rate around 82% last year. He had more walks than strikeouts last year, 414 OBP, you know, stole 44 bags. So, you know, only a 6.6% swing and strike rate. A lot of good there, but, you know, the real X factor, the real question with him is, you know, how much power will he get into? You know, he's not a guy that's going to be a minimal power guy. I think the question is he more of like a, I don't know, like 14 to 16 homer guy, or can he get to 20 plus? And he's already looking a lot bigger this year than he did last year. So still have a good amount of hope that, you know, the additional game power will start translating here, you know, maybe even in 2025. Maybe we see him. He had 5 home runs last year in 98 games. I think you see more power output from him. And if he can get up to being a guy that could flirt with like 20 homers a year to go along with the, you know, the high average, the high OBP, you know, and plenty of steals, you know, maybe he's never going to be, you know, a masher, but this could be a very well-rounded and high-floor profile as well. So I think you're going to see a really big jump-up rankings for Churio. I have him, I think, in the 60 or so range right now. So I think you definitely see him, especially if that power starts coming along more consistently in games this year. I think you see Churio as a damn near universal, you know, top 25 prospect at the end of the season. All right, let's go into our next five here. So this is 15 through 11. Chris, who you got?
All right, I've got Chase Burns at 15, and then I got Connor Griffin, Josue De Paula, Zaire Hope, and Bryce Eldridge just outside the top 10.
All right, I have Jack Caglione, who just hit a massive home run earlier today on Sunday. Zaire Hope, Charlie Condon, Felnin Celestin, and Noah Schultz at 11 for me. You got two Dodgers there back-to-back, Chris, with De Paula 13, Zaire Hope 12. I mean, I had Hope at 14 and De Paula at 20. So we both have them in this top 25. So what do you like from Hope and De Paula? Maybe start with De Paula. I think we've talked a lot more about Hope than De Paula on the show, especially, you know, with seeing him out in the Arizona Fall League. So let's kind of do a little bit more of a dive in here to Josue De Paula. What do you like about his profile that has, you know, you have him here at number 13 overall?
Yeah, if you've watched Zaire Hope this spring, like, it tells you a lot, I think, about the kind of player. Like, he's been really, really good. But yeah, we've hit on him a ton. De Paula is very fascinating. He has been good for a long time. He's been hyped for a long time, and for good reason. Like, he's a big frame. He's surprisingly, you look, he doesn't look like a good runner. He's been successful on the bases, 27 of 30, stolen bases last year. His swing is interesting. It's, you know, he's open. He gets a big leg kick. It's really good hand-to-hip separation, though, and he just generates a ton of power in that way with his lower half, and he keeps his hands inside the ball exceptionally well, which I like. It's the ball hard. His ninth percentile was 105 last year. He maxed out at 123. I think it's a misread. I'm not convinced that actually happened. I've yet to find the clip where I think it happened. I just have the number, the max of 123. So I don't know. I think that's probably a misread. But regardless, like, De Paula has really good power. The question is, like, he's hit the ball on the ground a lot in his career. He's been around 46-48%. So it's higher ground ball rates, which is the concern. But the plate discipline is really good. One of the better chase rates in the minors, around 17%. His overall contact rate's really good. End zone contact, 83%. So he just kind of does a lot of things well. I think there's been the questions of, where does De Paula fit in the field? He's shown to not be a great outfielder at times. He's very inconsistent with what he shows. So that does leave question, does he go to first base? Like, he has that frame. Is he just a DH? And I think those questions are real, like, if you think about it, because the glove is certainly something he needs to answer. But the bat is good. I think the hit tool is way better than it's been advertised. And, yeah, I'm obviously a believer in the power. Like, it's legit power for sure to all fields. And the home run totals haven't, like, wowed anybody yet. But I really do think that they will get there over time. So, yeah, big fan of DePaula.
Yeah, as am I. So many Dodgers prospects that I like right now. I mean, you know, Emil Morales, another one I'm pretty high on, Yoenis Vargas. Obviously, Dalton Rushing, who I hope graduates this year. We shall see. Does that, though, you know, given how loaded the Dodgers are and just how difficult it's been for, you know, guys to break into this Dodgers team lately, and, you know, probably will be this similar case this year with Dalton Rushing, does that give you any pause? Now, people have asked me that, and my answer usually is something along the lines of, usually these things have a way of working themselves out, whether it be injury opening up time or a trade elsewhere. But does that give you pause when targeting a Dodgers prospect, Chris?
Not really. The talent's there. They're a great development org. Don't anybody tell you they're not. People say, oh, they don't have homegrown talent in the majors. Okay, their player development is the best in MLB. I mean, it 100% is. You ask people that work in baseball, they'll tell you that. I actually like them developing these guys. If they trade them, then perfect. If they trade for a guy, you know you should like them. Mike Sirota, they right. traded for him for a reason. So yeah, watch out for Sirota this year. But no, I don't think so. They'll find their way. It's going to be a frustrating year for Dalton Rushing, I think, just with plate appearances. But I think he'll get there eventually for sure. So talent always works itself out.
Yep. I almost included Dalton Rushing in here because I wasn't like 100% yeah. certain that he gets 130 at-bats at the major league level. I hope he does, but who knows? I mean, they said that he could, you know, meet between catcher, first base. I think he's getting some reps at first base. Maybe outfield still a possibility there. So who knows with Rushing. But all of these other guys we're talking about are so far away that it's like a couple years before we see these guys in the major leagues. Definitely not any 2025 impact from Zaire Hope and DePaula at the major league level. The other guy I wanted to highlight from my side here, Felnin Celestin. I had him number one in my Seattle prospect rankings, which I think was about a week ago now or so. And, you know, I think that I wouldn't say it's controversial, but I feel like if you like put a poll up there between like him, Colt Amerson, and Lazaro Montes, you know, I feel like Celestin would finish third in that poll as to, you know, who is the top Seattle prospect. But, you know, I have some concerns about how much, you know, power speed Emerson gets to ultimately, some concerns about, you know, the contact skills with Lazaro Montes, even though he's got massive raw power. So I feel like the profile out of those three that I felt, you know, kind of was the best all around profile for fantasy purposes was a Felnin Celestin, who's already showing, you know, good power for his age. He's a good athlete. I mean, maybe he, you know, slows down a tick as he fills out, but I don't think it'll be any sort of, you know, significant speed drop off. I feel like, you know, we could be looking at plus or better power and still at least an above average runner. And you know, contact skills, approach are all pretty solid as well. I mean, he kept the K rate under 20% at the complex level last year in 144 plate appearances. Walk rate was 12.5%. You know, hit 352. Swing and strike rate was around 11%, which is pretty decent. And contact rate was around 77% overall. So I think the contact skills, the hit tool overall, it's solid for his age. And, you know, I think there's good, again, good power speed in there. So I think he's going to be a well-rounded five-category fantasy contributor. And I think he's, you know, maybe he could even be a top 10 guy by the end of this season for prospect rankings. I like him a lot. So Bryce Eldridge you had at 11, Chris. You don't think Eldridge graduates this year?
I don't. I mean, I just look at somebody that just turned 20, and I think that there would be some major struggles if they pushed him to the majors. We got to remember, he got, a week in AA and then a week in AAA last year.
Like, something like that, yeah.
He was in single A and high A most of the year. And I'm almost certain, he was the final week of AA, he went there. In the final week of AAA, he went there. He went to the AFL as well. I understand that. I know he hit one 450. Okay, it's Arizona. The ball travels 30 feet further there. But Eldridge is great. I just think that he needs more seasoning. Maybe I'm crazy. I've said it all offseason. I think he's going back to double A to start the year.
I hope so. I might be able to see him live then.
I mean, yeah, it makes the most sense for him to go to double. I think he's a late season call up that still is prospect eligible going into 2026.
Yeah, there was a handful of players that I was really on the fence about including or not including because of, you know, graduating or not graduating. Eldridge was one of them. You know, Noah Schultz will have at 11 was another one. I mean, I think he debuts. I'm just not sure if he gets over the 50 inning mark. You know, I have Jack Caglione, who I think, you know, could debut this year as well, but I don't think he debuts early enough. So for you, for Caglione, did you not include him because you don't think he do you think he graduates or you didn't have him in your top 25?
Just didn't have him in the top 25.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah, he's another one that I think could, you know, Nick Kurtz as well. All these top first base prospects are, I'm kind of on the fence about. Same thing with Kurtz. Do you think Kurtz graduates or not top 25 for Kurtz?
Yeah, I think Kurtz is on the Jacob Wilson path where he got called up right after the All-Star break. Mm-hmm. I think that that's probably Kurtz's path. Just given their history of how they've promoted guys and his readiness, I think it's a midseason call-up.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. I don't have him on. I would have had him probably, you know, in the back end of the top 10 or so. But, yeah, I think he graduates as well. And now I'm looking to see if Richmond AA for San Fran comes anywhere near me anytime early in the season. Not looking likely. Unless I want to drive to New York, which I really don't want to do. I do have limits of how far I'll drive. I've driven to Hartford, Connecticut, 3.5 hours to watch Casey Mize, Matt Manning pitch back-to-back days. But that's probably, yeah, I'm not going to have a chance to see him unless I, you know, make a special trip. So that's unfortunate, but all right.
He'd probably sit out the night you did if you drove a long way. He'd be out of the lineup.
I would be. Like, I had that thought. When me and my buddy drove down, and I was looking the whole way. I was like waiting. I think Mize pitched first, and the Manning was the following day. And I was like, God, if one of these two gets scratched for whatever reason, and it was also like wasn't the greatest weather. It was kind of like raining off and on, so I was worried about it getting, you know, pushed back a day or whatever. So yeah, that would suck. I've driven to New Hampshire, 2-hour drive to see Tiedemann, and that got rained out. So I've definitely dealt with stuff like that, unfortunately, as I'm sure you have as well. It's the joys of minor league baseball. But, all right, let's move on. Anybody else you wanted to hit on here in your 15 through 11 range, Chris?
Nope, I think we're good.
All right, moving on to the top 10 here. So recap so far, 25 through 11. Chris, Jamie Arnold, Griffin Burkholder, Yael Padilla, Arjun Namala, Braden Montgomery, another one I considered here for my top 25. Cam Smith, Angel Janao, Felton Celestin, Thomas White, Travis Acora, Chase Burns, Connor Griffin, Josue De Paula, Zaire Hope, Bryce Eldridge, for me, Cole Emerson, Yoelin Susana, Eduardo Beltre, Aiden Smith, Jamie Arnold, Josue De Paula, Jason Churio, Jace Lavalette, Chase Burns, Robert Collaz, Jack Caglione, Zaire Hope, Charlie Condon, Felton Celestin, and Noah Schultz. 10 through 6 for me, I get J.J. Weatherholt, Travis Sakura, who is my top pitcher on this list right now, Kevin McGonigal, Leodalis DeVries, and Travis Bazana are my 10 through 6. Who do you got there, Chris?
All right, I've got Basayo at 10, McGonigal 9, Jason Churio at 8, Leo DeVries at 7, and Jesus Mate at 6.
All right, we're getting into the big boys here, but another one that I know I was another one I was very much on the fence with debuting this year and graduating was Sammy Basayo. It's just, I mean, I think the talent, you know, if he was in like literally almost any other org, I mean, outside of, you know, the Dodgers too, obviously, but I feel like Basayo would graduate, but since he's in Baltimore, you know, pretty blocked, even though he's one of the best hitting prospects in the game, he's one where, I don't know, maybe I should have included him because I think it's going to be hard for him to break in without an injury this year.
Yeah, I just don't see a real fit for Basayo. Also, young and needs to clean up the approach. We saw, honestly, a pretty rough approach last year with Basayo where he began to really chase more. He was swinging way too early in counts and not seeing a lot of pitches in at-bats. I think that he spends pretty much the whole year in AAA, maybe a cup of coffee in September, but I think Bisaccia, I would say it's a, for me, I think it's about 100% certainty he doesn't graduate. Unless like Adley were to go down, which we hope wouldn't happen. But even then, like, are they going to push Bisaccia if he's not ready?
Yeah, that's a good question. Definitely a difficult situation. Kobe Mayo as well. See how many, you know, at bats he gets at the major league level this year, and definitely no room for either of them right now. But someone that does not have to clean up the approach, someone that we both have here in the top 10, someone that has been, I think, one of just the, you know, I already like this guy heading into the offseason, but, you know, further, you know, breaking down of rankings, whether it be positionally or by team, we got to dig into his profile a bit more. I freaking love Kevin McGonigal, and it was fun. We posted the, you know, the little, you know, spend $15, you know, build your best fantasy infield chart with the 5-4-3-2-1 dollar breakdown. Kevin McGonigal was the $4 option at second base, and Max Clark quote tweeted it saying, McGonigal, and then $3 worth of McGonigal for his fourth guy, which, you know, he's repping his organizational teammate there with McGonigal. It's easy to see why. You know, look at such a great, you know, talk about the base of skills that Cherryo has, even more so with Kevin McGonigal, who had a contact rate damn near 90% overall last year. Swinging strike rate was under 5%. And the guy hit .309 with a .401 OBP. This is between low A and high A, with damn near twice as many walks as strikeouts, too. He had a 14% walk rate, only an 8.5% strikeout rate. You know, there's definitely some power in the profile as well, Chris. I mean, you know, if that power does kind of take off this year, I mean, we could be looking at top five for McGonigal, really.
Yeah, I mean, the power's there. Had a 112 EV last year, 19-year-old, like smaller guy, strong frame. Contact skills are very, very impressive. Just a grinder ball player that you want on your team. So, yeah, I think it's 100% possibility that McGonigal makes a massive, massive leap. Obviously, coming off broken hamate, not ideal ever. And sometimes it zaps power initially. So that'll be something to watch out the gate. But, yeah, I'm definitely liking on Kevin McGonigal.
Yeah, I'm hoping, because, you know, at some point, probably second half of the season, you know, both him and Max Clark will be up with Double-A Erie, who Portland sees a lot more than Richmond. So I'm hoping I'll be able to see a lot of McGonigal or and Clark, hopefully, you know, get to basically every game that series if they do come here in like July, August or so. I'll have to look at that after the show. I'm not going to look right now. Even though I'm lying, I'm currently on the schedule as we speak, but I don't know. I can't find it right now. I'll look later, but yeah, definitely that Detroit, they're brewing something there in Detroit. I mean, I think Detroit's going to be pretty damn good for the next 5+ years or so. They got a lot of good pitching prospects, you know, just young pitchers in general, a lot of good hitting prospects there in Detroit. So yeah, I like McGonigal a lot. I mean, like I said, it's elite hit tool. I think you could put a 70 grade on McGonigal's hit tool. And I think he's not the biggest power speed guy, but he's going to provide, you know, a decent power speed, maybe even flirt with like 20-20 annually as well. So I might not even have him high enough. I haven't already have him top 20 overall right now. You know, I want to put him top 10, but just so many good guys up there right now, it's hard to put him top 10 at this current juncture. But if that power becomes more consistent in games, he starts hitting, you know, turn some of those doubles into home runs, yeah, I think he's going to be, you know, universal top 10 prospect by the end of the season here. So, you know, love Kevin McGonigal. We got, you know, both have Leo Dallas DeVries here at number 7. You know, Chris, with DeVries, I think he's another one that could be in that running for number 1 prospect this time next year. Obviously, you know, after a little bit of a slower start at low A this year, really found his footing there. You know, were you tempted to put DeVries a bit higher than 7?
No, I mean, I just was not all that inspired with what I saw in the AFL, even though saw his new high max EV. His body's not great. He's a lot smaller than listed, and it's just not a great body where I look at it and I'm like, oh, that's exciting. Like you look at the Sebastian Walcott, or you look at like a Jesus Mate. Like, DeVries is a really good ball player. Like, no doubt about that. Really good contact skills. But I don't know. Like, I'm not sure, like, if I'm betting on, like, a future number one prospect, like, it's probably not him, even though the skill set's good. There's just other guys with just much more upside, in my opinion.
Like a Jesus Madé, who you have at six. I actually thought when we started doing this, I thought you might put Madé at one.
It would have been fun. I just so much more comfortable with Sebastian Wolcott. Like, the player he is, I've seen him a ton. The data's absurd. And so, like, Wolcott was just, like, the no-brainer for me. I mean, he showed improving contact skills. He hit a ball 116 miles an hour at 18 years old. Like, his EVs are already plus standard by major league average, like major league averages. So it was just any runs. Like, he's a great athlete. So I think Wolcott was like the easy de facto choice for me there.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I got as my top pitcher here. I got Travis Secor. So that's my top pitcher on the list. Chris's top pitcher was, who was your top pitcher?
Chase Burns.
Chase Burns, but one spot ahead of Travis Secor. I mean, Secor was so, so good last year. Obviously, had, you know, missed a little bit of time, but you know, when he did come back, he was absolutely phenomenal. Had one of the better minor league seasons last year for any pitching prospect. You know, was limited to, what was it, 80-something? Yeah, 85 innings overall, but a 2.33 ERA, a whip well under one at 0.9, and 27 walks to 129 strikeouts as a 20-year-old in low A. I mean, maybe it's a little bold to have him as number one pitching prospect, but hey, I mean, you almost did as well. It's a really good three-pitch mix, fastball, slider, changeup. You know, he can miss, well, it's more like a split change. So he can miss bats with all three of those. And the fastball is just really, it's like, already sitting, you know, 95, 96, 97, as high as 98, 99. And he's got great extension as well. Really good command and feel for his entire arsenal. Like, this is one of the more advanced pitchers in the minor leagues, even it is in general, not just for his age, but especially for his age. You got that big frame, 6'6", you know, 225 or so. It can spin a tight slider. Good feel for his changeup. You know, good velocity separation there, too. I just, so many things I look for in a, you know, future frontline guys and a future number one pitching prospect. Travis Secor has, you know, Noah Schultz was another one where he's, you know, I had him on the verge of, you know, graduating off prospect rankings this year. And I think a lot of people probably do. And so Secor and Schultz are my top two. And then I have Burns at three. But can't go wrong with any of those three there. All right, let's go to, want to go to the top five now, Chris? Close out the show?
Let's do it.
All right, so top five for Chris Clegg in 2026 is?
Walker Jenkins at five. Max Clark at four. J.J. Weatherholt at three. Travis Bazzana at two. And already gave it away. Sebastian Wolcott at number one.
All right. So we have, three similar ones here. I have Connor Griffin at five, Sebastian Wolcott at four, Jesus Madé at three, Walker Jenkins at two, and Max Clark at number one overall. And this was really hard. I couldn't make a case for any of my top five being number one overall here. I debated with the order, played with the order a little bit. You know, yes, begun 2 weeks from now. I might have a different order, as I don't think there's any, at least for me, there's no clear-cut number one. They all have a lot of strengths. They all have some question marks. You know, like, you know, for instance, my top two, Clark and Jenkins, who Chris had at 4-5. You know, kind of similar question for both of them, Chris, is just how much power do each of these guys add? I mean, they have, you know, the good blend of hit and, you know, speed and athleticism and approach. That's all really good already for Clark and Jenkins. But, you know, if they're not going to be adding more power into the mix, which they both have the frame and projection to add more power, it's just a matter of, you know, we can say that right now, but will it happen? You know, so, you know, that's kind of the X factor for both of them. And Wolcott's already showing, you know, more power. You know, obviously, Bazzana, Weatherholt for Chris are very advanced hitters. So kind of got to wonder, do Clark and Jenkins
add that power. But I think they do, and you have them both top five, so I'm assuming you believe that, you know, these two, Clark and Jenkins, tap into that power more consistently this year, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny that everybody's, like, so down on Jenkins, considering how elite he is at several different things. It's somebody that doesn't sell out for power, for one. Like, he's not actively trying to hit for power. He lets power come to him. Also, if you compare to players his age, the exit velocities are well above average. All his highest exit velocities came at the end of the season after he had left single A. Everybody only looks at the Florida State League exit velocities. He popped several over 110 in high A and double A. The contact skills are very good. He is strong in the outfield, and he can run too. Like, he's a pretty solid runner for his size. So it's a well-rounded profile, and it's really safe. Clark already has some juice in the bat. He had a 103 at .290, which is just shy of MLB average. So Clark also very young. He went to Driveline this offseason. He intentionally worked to bulk up and add bat speed. He doesn't need to add anything but power to the profile, and all of a sudden, like, it takes off. Like,
yep.
Max Clark has everything that you want to see already in that profile. It was just a matter of, can he add power? And for a young kid, like, yeah, he's not the biggest frame. Like, Jenkins has the frame where it's like, yeah, definitely, the power's coming. That's not the case for Clark. He's smaller than listed, but still, I believe in the power from Max Clark. He's got the speed. He's a great glove in center field, makes a lot of contact. 70 run, probably. I mean, he's got it all.
Yeah, I don't. And he obviously was really fun to chat with, you know, when we talked with him, was it 2-3 years ago? I believe it was, or maybe longer. I can't remember when that was at this point. But, you know, lots of exciting tools with Clark, and you know, just adding a bit more game power. You know, watch out, the sky's the limit for him. Same with this next guy, too. I've said, you know, multiple times that I think Connor Griffin might have the highest upside of anybody in the 2024 draft class for fantasy purposes. You know, maybe not including rookie Sasaki, but anybody in the actual draft itself, because Connor Griffin is obviously, you know, an elite premium athlete. He stole 486,000 bags last year, senior high school. You know, what was it actually, like 90-something or 80-something?
95,
like,
I think.
95, yes. Some stupid, like, I feel bad. Like, you know, some poor catcher on the other team, like, you know, just came out of, like, having a science biology test, and he's going to try to throw Connor Griffin on the base pass. That's just not fair. But, you know, Griffin, you know, obviously some concerns with where the hit tool winds up long term, but, you know, one of the more raw players in that draft class. But, man, especially if the power comes along, you know, game power wise, I mean, he's already, you know, big, strong kid. Didn't really hit, you know, for a huge power last year, but has that potential to be, you know, 60 grade power, 70 speed. So the upside is just off the charts. And if the hit tool comes along, I have confidence in Pittsburgh's, you know, player development. And I think that system is on the rise overall. So definitely, you know, I think you could see Connor Griffin have a big first, you know, full year here in the minor leagues and really, really shoot up into the elite top 10, top 5 rank of prospects here. Let's close it out, Chris. I mean, you already kind of talked about him a little bit, but your number one there, Sebastian Walcott, obviously, you know, insane upside in his own right. You know, so can I give a little bit more depth here on why Walcott is number one for you?
I mean, as an 18-year-old, he started the year in high A, reached double A. He handled his own. He honestly got better all year. Like, what he did was just absurd. The data is off the charts. The power is really undeniable with Sebastian Walcott. I mean, to put up the numbers that he did as an 18-year-old, insane. Like, you just don't see that. He's 6'4", 190. The frame, the athlete, like, he checks every box that you want to see. He runs well, steals bases. The contact skills, yeah, I mean, you look at the whole picture for the year at contact. I mean, it wasn't great. 67% overall, 78% in zone. Chased around a 27% clip. But again, 18 in high A and double A. The numbers improved all year. The strikeout rate over the final 3 months was 23%. The contact rate was up over 70% over that span. 106 mile an hour ninth percentile exit velocity, a 116.3 max. Again, 18 years old. Nearly 60% of his batted balls were in the air. And he pulls the ball in the air often. Like his air pull percentage was like in the 90th percentile for all hitters in the minors. Foot speed's plus. It's just electric bat speed. Yeah, he checks every box that you want to see from a future superstar. And quite frankly, like, I think his upside's higher than anybody in the minors. So yeah. Walcott gets the nod, number one.
All right. That was a fun little exercise here. We'll check back in a year, see how we do. I mean, obviously a lot of fun players here. And it'll be fun to see more so, like, you know, not the ones we might have gotten wrong, but who else, you know, pops up this year and gets into this mix that we didn't, you know, talk about today. It's always fun to see that, but that will conclude the show. We will do the overall dynasty version of this crystal ball episode later in the week. That'll be a lot of fun as well. But until then, everyone take care.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.